Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, to the Winter is Coming Game of Thrones podcast. We are Take the Black, and I'm House Razor. I'm here with Dan Selke. He's going to be joining us tonight. Isis, Corey Bone, and Corey Smith. And we are going to be talking about some fun topics like the Game of Thrones prequels that are coming out, or actually starting filming soon, we hope. And we've got a little bit of Season 8 filming news, and it's all wrapped up, but since the last time we talked, there's been some developments. So, let's get right into it. Let's start with the old stuff first. Dan, you talked about this a lot on Take the Black Live for the past couple of weeks. Season 8 is now officially over. Kit Harington has danced his last dance at the Rat Party, and the big news was King's Landing, how it basically was burned down, right?
Yes, to a cinder, Razor. That's correct.
Okay, so walk us through this. It had the big, all for about, almost 6-7 months now, it's been a big, sprawling, beautiful city set, and buildings popping up as it goes, and then towards the last weeks of filming, especially the last week, they just basically wrecked it, right?
Yeah, it makes sense. So they built it up big and beautiful, and then the last, a 3-week period, they just bashed the hell out of it and burnt down the buildings and, you know, added soot everywhere and smoke was rising. It was fun. So I'm sure it'll result in an explosive, exciting-to-watch King's Landing under attack sequence. Which, you know, it's been 8 years. We never really got a proper battle in the streets of King's Landing, so that should be a fun new way to round out the series. I can see that. I can see liking that.
All we've really had is the Battle of Blackwater, and the Sept of Baelor being blown up. So it's high time that King's Landing gets its just reward. But I guess this kind of ruins the whole let's leave it up so people can come tour it later, right?
Well, I mean, I was wondering that. Like, I wonder if they're going to rebuild those parts, or just maybe people would rather walk around the blackened ruins of the city. I don't know. I'd take either.
I would too. I would do it. I would go visit it anytime. But let's talk about talk to me about the siege towers that you said were weird because it has what, animal skins on them?
They're bringing all kinds of props. They had, you know, dragon green screen props, and at one point they had these just bizarre looking skin and fur covered towers that kind of look like unholy flesh buildings, but I think are just siege towers covered in skins so they can't be set on fire.
Corey Smith, I've heard people say that they're Dothraki siege towers, but Dothraki don't build siege towers, do they?
Yeah, they definitely, if you just saw it in a vacuum, because they're covered in horse hides or animal hides, you would assume they're Dothraki. And in medieval sieges, you cover siege towers with hides to keep them from catching the fire. I think even in some of the books, George mentions that, like when the wildlings are storming the wall and things like that. So, these are one of those things where we see the pictures, they're super clear, and we just can't put our finger on what it is. Maybe it's still Dothraki, maybe they had to build siege towers. They've also never really, you know, stormed a Westerosi castle. So, you know, the other, you know, Essos had cities and had walls, but I think this is just kind of a different thing for them. So, you know, if they're trying to get into the Red Keep, they'd need it, something like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, we don't really know. And maybe it ends up just being something super obvious and they're just siege towers that Dothraki built. But it really could be kind of anything or everything at this point because we just can't put our fingers on it.
Isis, how are you doing tonight?
I am here. I'm just listening to Corey just drone on and not really going to answer.
There it is.
I'm sorry. I lost interest because he just like kind of just waffled back and forth. And I just was like, okay, I've totally lost interest in this conversation.
We are officially back whenever Isis is making fun of Smith. But Isis, I have to ask you, if you see these siege towers covered in animal furs, you're obviously thinking Dothraki, but we saw in season
obviously
7 that the Army of the Dead had giants with bows on their shoulders. What if it's towers that are built from the dead?
Okay.
I don't know.
Work with me.
I'm super serious. Like, I'm so not invested in this conversation. Maybe it's because I'm not a book reader or whatever. I'm just totally not invested in.
Nobody's a book reader right now. Nobody's reading any books.
I'm just not invested in this conversation of whether what could it be? No, I'm so much more invested in maybe about the prequels and things like that. I mean, I just don't see how this is going to push the story forward. I may be wrong. I mean,
golly.
I know. I come back after a hiatus and I'm just lobbing bombs today, but.
We wouldn't have it any other way, to be honest.
Well, I know. But, I mean,
it's over. Filming's over. What's next?
I'm just like, what's next? I mean,
maybe I'm holding on to it because it's over forever. Maybe I'm just sad.
It's real to me.
Sans is just like filming.
I'll jump in with Isis on this one and just say I don't really care too much about discussing the siege tower because it's a siege. Yeah, it's minutiae. This is like, I mean, you know, I get why there are people out there, and I know that there are three of them on this podcast that are the kind of people that would really, really like to talk about all the options for this siege tower. You know, what it could be, who built it, where's it at, what's the significance, why the skins, blah, and the Avian and Isis are like,
Corey,
probably just gonna listen. If the only siege towers I'm even familiar with are pushed by trolls toward the Minas Tirith gates.
He did Corey Thone, after 2 or 3 weeks off, has fit in a Lord of the Rings comment into this podcast, and I am fucking proud of him. I'm just gonna.
If you guys look behind me, there's a banner.
I think we should all drink.
Yeah, I got you.
Drink
way ahead of you.
Okay, yeah, but let me ask you this though. So you don't want to talk about siege towers, but
it's not that I don't want to talk about it.
Are you concerned about what Sophie Turner is going to be wearing? Because I know you really love costumes, and you want to talk about it.
Talking to me, right?
Yeah, you absolutely you, totally you.
Yeah, I'm assuming it'll be clothes, probably a fabric, maybe a blend, and it will be worn on her body, possibly her head, and will certainly give someone something to talk about somewhere. But in my household, we will not be discussing clothing a year out.
You are, as always, the stalwart person of this podcast.
As for me in my house, we will talk about season two.
You will serve the Lord of Light. Gotcha. Corey Smith.
Well, I will say this. When it does come time to talk about her clothing, I will talk about it, but not months before we even get to see it.
I get that. We'll get onto that when it happens. But since everybody wants to move on to the prequels, let's just get right into it. Yeah, we could talk about
they're making prequels?
What? Yeah, obviously.
Shut the front door.
Now, we already know that the Age of Heroes / Long Night, whatever it's going to be about prequel, has been greenlit, at least the pilot has. And we got news that from the Belfast Telegraph, that filming could start in October. That's pretty exciting. And they're going to be returning to the Titanic Quarter, which HBO is familiar with. So that's kind of cool. But we also got news since the last time we recorded of another prequel that takes place during the time of Old Valyria, where House Targaryen comes from, called Empire of Ash. We don't know if this is confirmed. It's kind of like a... Dan, you know the word I'm looking for, unsubstantiated report, correct?
I think it's a solid word. Good job.
Yeah. So, Dan, you caught this story. So let us know what's going on. Obviously, some of us know what Old Valyria is before the uneducated masses out there.
talking about us.
Yeah. Tell us what this would be about.
Sure. Okay. So, an unsubstantiated but extremely detailed rumor set a tiny corner of the internet on fire last week when a person who works on the Game of Thrones wiki, I think, so they claim to be tapped in. This could be completely false, by the way, but it's still exciting. Claim to have just detailed knowledge that would be all about Old Valyria. So Daenerys' ancestors, living in Valyria, that place that Jorah and Tyrion sailed through in season 5. Mm-hmm. And just everybody's on dragons. It's like the Roman Empire at its height. And it would be about the collapse of it through the Davos. They have a client state would be a big part of it. On Sothorios, the other continent we never really see. It would have, you know, it would be like Game of Thrones. There'd be different characters, different factions, kind of battling for supremacy. And on the horizon would be what happened to Valyria, which is the doom. It all goes up in smoke. All the dragons die, and it turns into that ruin we see on Game of Thrones. So it would be a series all about leading up to that and kind of the political, social, and military events that took it down, a la the Roman Empire falling.
Right, and so they're not going to. It's not going to just be dragons and dragon lords. They're also going to have, like, did I read, is it correctly, either a former slave or a slave trader or somebody who rises into the political atmosphere of Old Valyria? I forget exactly how that went, but there's going to be a lot of different aspects into this show. And I, when we first
moving parts,
and when we first got news of prequels, I wanted something from Valyria because I've always been a fan of House Targaryen, the dragons, and I thought it would be neat. My only concern is, if we do a show about Old Valyria, Empire Bash, it's going to have to be CGI heavy. Now, Corey Phelan, I'm going to take this question to you. As I always say, you're our resident television expert, Americana. How do you feel about a show, even though it's HBO, and if it's going to be HBO and they go forward, it's going to be well done, obviously. How do you feel about a show that's going to be heavily CGI like that?
It's going to be expensive to make it look good. It's, you know, going to take, I don't know. I feel like they're going to have to work to establish the tone of a new show. Like, that's, if you're going to go lots of CGI, if you're going to change the entire, like, it's not going to be in Westeros. It's going to be in the other place, Easteros or whatever. And they, you know, it's going to, if they try to match beat for beat with season 1 and 2 of Game of Thrones, it's going to fail because it's not, and I don't think they'll make that mistake, but at the same time, they wouldn't be the first network to make that mistake.
Right.
And, you know, good networks have done, like, you know, the most successful spinoffs are ones that find their own voice in the universe. The best example right now is Better Call Saul, which I would argue is better than Breaking Bad. And it is outstanding. And the reason is because it's not as dark yet. I mean, it still gets dark, but it's a little more funny. It, you know, with Game of Thrones, there are moments of levity. There are, if they're going to lean really hard into the magic, because I want to understand that era was far more magical.
Right.
So if we're going to go hard in the magic and CGI, fine, but I don't know if you want to try to also mix in the type of political maneuvering you had in the beginning of Game of Thrones, which was much more grounded in just standard, you know, like era appropriate political maneuvering. I don't know if that really makes sense, but that's what would concern me about it, is it being this 50-50 split of magic and dragons out the gate. And, oh, also here's a, you know, monologue about climbing the ladder or whatever. So
breaking the wheel.
Yeah.
Isis, you aren't really a big fan of this, it seems like.
I didn't like the fact that you said who was in charge of this was the same guy who did Godzilla.
That
I was like, that sounds absolutely awful. I absolutely hate the idea that this guy from that did the Godzilla movie, the most current one, because that just sounds like an awful, awful idea to go ahead and give this person who, also, I mean, God damn, that's just an awful idea. And I
they build that movie. I'm sorry, I hate that movie too. And they build it as Heisenberg versus Godzilla. They kill him off in like 30 minutes. And then we got a movie that was literally centered around, like, just everything was just so, I can't say it, serendipitous as shit. Like, I think the worst part of the movie, if you guys can, because I hate this movie enough that I've talked about hating it enough, that Do you remember when
actually watched it, which is actually
I went to the okay, but it had a it had like a 70+% on Rotten Tomatoes. Uh-huh. It was like a well reviewed movie, and then I get there and just got a pile of shit. And there's like the part where Aaron Taylor whatever his name is, Jonathan Taylor Thomas, finds there's like a big mass of people running, right? And you're like, okay, so we know that you're not gonna kill him, right? Like he's not gonna die yet. So they just have this blonde girl. By the way, they're in Japan, and he just finds like the one blonde kid, like, and he grabs the kid and protects her.
Finds from Wanda Godzilla. From
then when Godzilla leaves, in this mass of a million people in the city, her parents are just standing like right there, and he's like, "Here's your kid back." And then like he goes off to his next adventure, and I wanted to leave. I was so mad at how bad that movie was. Anyway, I just. Back to you. Sorry.
Yeah. No. Thank you for adding some context. I myself have not watched that movie. I saved the money and put it to a better movie watch. But I
Mamma Mia, right?
I enjoy your dedication to hate watching a movie. So no, the premise sounds really cool. I don't have a problem with it. It is going to be CGI heavy. You know, it would almost be like. You know what? I'd almost probably watch an animated version of that versus watching a live action if it's going to be so CGI heavy. You know what I mean?
Is there a legitimate drama that is animated? Like, I know you have, Netflix has, you know, like F is for Family and BoJack Horseman. You know, those shows are adult for sure, but they're still rooted in comedy and, you know, Big Mouth or whatever. Obviously, you had The Simpsons, Family Guy, and the Fox Lioness. Those are all comedies. Archer is a comedy. I'm really trying to rack my brain. Has there been a legitimately big budgeted, serious drama animated on TV?
I don't think so. Like, not out of Japan, maybe. And actually,
I meant to say anime would be the only thing that I. But that is, A, that's Japanese, and B, it's also, like, its own jam.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
it animates its own whole thing. But, I mean, I think the idea is really interesting because, I mean, what's HBO want here? It wants to replicate the success of Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. The problem is, you don't have the novelty anymore. You've already done Game of Thrones. Like, so, and the type of day at the walk is... Can we have a new show that's as exciting and as popular as Game of Thrones, even though it's going to tread some new territory? So actually, I think the idea of doing like a dramatic cartoon for an American audience, like it can be the first thing to do that. Like Game of Thrones was the first show to kind of marry the fantasy and the prestige TV on that huge a scale. Like if it really wants a big hit, I feel like it can't just do what Game of Thrones did. It's got to try something really new, and it's going to be hard. For a network that wants a guaranteed return on investment, and
the last,
as we just saw from their press conference,
right. The last animated show that I can think even went halfway serious was the Clone Wars. But
yeah, that's a decent example. But that was also on Cartoon Network and was definitely PG.
Right. I think,
honestly, when I think of movies too, like the most animated movies. For adults that were mainstream marketed. Like, was the last one Beowulf with Ray Winston?
Wow.
And even that's a weird.
Yeah, that's amazing. No, what was the one with the hamburger bun? No, the hot dog buns. But it was a comedy.
Sausage Party.
Sausage Party. Yeah.
Oh my God. That was good.
Look, I'm just trying to keep it real.
No, that's.
It was good.
But even The Hobbit back in the day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, those hand-drawn hobbits terrified me. They haunted my dreams.
The Nazgul scared the shit out of me.
There was like a mini explosion like the 80s of like Ralph Bakshi-inspired hardcore animated movies like Heavy Metal and The Hobbit movies.
The Transformer movie, come on, man. Back in the day.
Yeah, I mean, and
Optimus Prime fucking died in that cartoon movie. And it made me cry.
But seriously, I mean, I guess I'm just trying to think about it out of the box. What can they do to still kind of, set the bar really high, but understanding the limitations that they have, you know, with CGI and the cost associated. I mean, they could, I bet you they could get some really huge names in a cartoon to voice these actors versus having to say, oh, I'm going to need you for 4 months or 5 months, you know, to film, you know, this stuff. Man, they could be popping in all kinds of guest stars to do the voicing of a lot of these actors. So, you know, I'm just here for the hot takes. And if HBO goes down this route, I would like to see some residuals. I'm just saying.
In all seriousness, though, if you do an animated show and you bring in voice actors, like many a lot of people didn't realize this until they looked into it. But in the Clone Wars, the voice actors for like Obi-Wan and Anakin, they weren't the actors themselves. They were like Aaron Taylor for Obi-Wan, like all these, or Anakin. So all these different actors. In fact, when they did the Force Awakens, they brought in the guy who did the voice of Obi-Wan. They brought in Ewan McGregor, and they took an audio recording of Alec Guinness. So they put it all together. So voice actors, they can replicate, you know, even if you did something that leaned on the show now, as we know at Game of Thrones, you don't have to bring in these big-name actors. You can just bring in whoever can sound like them, and you're fine. But
if you're at HBO level, you're going to bring in some names. I mean, I'm just going to put it out there.
But I mean,
you got a budget to go. I mean, especially if you're going to go ahead and save money and stuff, and you're going to do an animated series. I mean, you can pay some ducats to go ahead and bring some really good, well-known names.
And it's funny that Bone brings up the fact, you know, the press release that HBO did, and you know, they talked about, what was the soundbite they gave there? That it's not just something every month. They want something all the time, like every hour or something like that. I forget exactly how it was.
No. It was a town hall meeting,
right,
with the new kind of head of the media department of HBO, of AT&T. AT&T bought HBO. They're coming in. They're going to make changes because that's what a company does when it takes over. And they just talked about how they want greater penetration. They want to conquer.
I love this podcast.
More people's time. And that means they want HBO to make more content.
Right.
And the fact that we heard about this Empire of Ash thing not long after that, I mean, I wonder if it's the result, because I mean, we heard way back before the merger happened that they were looking at all these different ideas, and maybe one or two or three of them will become actual shows. I mean, HBO didn't need AT&T to tell them, hey, make a Game of Thrones prequel. People will watch it and pay you money. So I'm not sure if AT&T was the catalyst, but I'm sure it will make them happy to have more than one Game of Thrones prequel on the air, if it's even true. Let's underline that too. This could all be rumor.
And if you're going, you know, like I was trying to say, if you're going to go down this path of, you know, ha ha ha, deeper penetration, but if you want to do that and you want to keep up with the Joneses of Amazon and Netflix and hell, even DCEU's got their own streaming service coming out. Disney's got a streaming service coming out. If HBO wants to try something along those lines, you know, maybe merge HBO Now, HBO Go, and everything they've got going on into a streaming service, having multiple prequels, animated, live, you know, live action, even a movie based in the Game of Thrones universe would be instantly successful even if the prequel doesn't last maybe one season, it's still going to be successful from when it's on the air. So,
and I still maintain, and we talked about it last time, that the best way for them to tell Game of Thrones stories going forward is not to do another 7 or 8 season series, but to do anthologies.
Mm-hmm.
Like True Detective style or whatever, American Horror Story, whichever one you want to look at, you can cast for one season. You'll get people, like Isis was saying, you know, nobody wants to commit to 5 to 6 seasons, no big name of stopping around in the shit, right?
Right.
But if you can just tell them one season, all that, I mean, like that, to me, that is where I would be most interested in hearing what they have planned, not 2 series coming out in the next, you know, 12 to 18 months that are Game of Thrones series with whole new sprawling casts and stuff like that. I don't know, like I'm worried about them overextending the universe and oversaturating it out the gate. So,
like Star Wars is right now.
No, I agree with Corey. I mean, that's an awesome take as far as like, you know, what they're doing with the American Horror Story, whatever. I don't actually watch that show, but I like the premise.
I do. I'll say it.
I just like the premise that they change it every year, and it may have some of the same people come back, but it's supposedly a new storyline or whatever the case may be. So I really think that is a really interesting take, and I think that maybe they can control costs that way as well.
One of the best,
Not only that, it makes it really snappy as far as their storytelling, because they're not having to say, "Oh, well, we got to wait until we reveal that in season two. We can't reveal that in season one and stretch it out."
Well, to wrap this little part of the conversation up, one of the best things that happened to, I don't know if you guys remember, the Spartacus series. Tragically, you know, the main actor who played Spartacus died, but when he first got cancer, they wanted to take time off, but instead of doing that, they made a prequel season, Spartacus Blood and Sand. They tied in a bunch of new gladiators. They told the story of House Badius and then brought him in at the very end of the series. So it worked out in that regard. Like, you know, something like that that happens with HBO and all the money they have to throw into a series like this, telling anthology seasons or, you know, tying a prequel into the main series, would be great. Corey Smith, I have a question for you because we haven't heard much from you. What would be your, we already talked about Empire of Ash. We talked about a little bit about the Age of Heroes. If you're looking at what they greenlit five, or they said they were going to approve five. So if you're looking at prequel ideas, what are you looking forward to? I mean, what are you looking at? What would you want to see?
Well, I just think it's interesting that, like you guys are saying, that if they want to replicate the success, it shouldn't be something that's the same as what we have already seen, right? So, to me, I think they picked the two series that are as different as any series could be. Because between the Age of Heroes and, you know, Valeria, whatever shape that takes, you don't have Westeros, you're not doing Robert's Rebellion, or Aegon's Conquest, or, you know, something like that. So, you know, I think they've already chosen the two that are different. And then I don't know that I necessarily buy all the details that came out about this Valeria series, but I don't think it's far-fetched because, you know, Martin said that they're still in various stages of development on the other ones. And that they could see another one getting, you know what I mean, developed. And they did only order a pilot of Age of Heroes. So I don't think it's far-fetched to think that they might order two pilots and then pick from one of them.
See which one tests better, huh?
Right. You know, especially when you consider they are choosing the two ones that are as different as can be. They might be not worried, but just they want to ensure that they get something that everybody's going to watch. My biggest problem, I know y'all are circling back a little bit, but as far as animation goes, my only problem with that would be is, you know, one of the best parts about Game of Thrones is not necessarily its special effects, but the acting of the cast. You know, Lena Headey makes her scenes. Peter Dinklage makes his scenes. And if we move to an animated form, I think a lot of that gets lost in the medium. So,
you mean like not connecting to the characters?
Yeah, I mean, it's not that you can't tell a compelling story or something that people want to watch or that has a good plot or something like that. But animation can't match human acting, I guess is my point.
Well, let me counterpoint you with that really quick. There was and I suck at you in a second. I see you want to say something, but there was an animated series for Star Wars that just finished this past year, Star Wars Rebels. It was kind of a kiddie cartoon, but it had some nice moments in it, like the Clone Wars. And in the very end, spoiler alert, the main Jedi character dies. He was voiced by Freddie Prinze Jr. It was a big deal. And that was an emotional moment. Like, if you watch that series over I think it was like four seasons. You really got invested in his character, and he had a love story with one of the other characters. He mentored another Jedi. They brought in a character from the Clone Wars and all that kind of stuff. It was a really, really, really good and connected character. So I think you can have an animated show, and you can connect to characters, especially if the story's told correctly.
Yeah, and no, I'm not saying you can't. I'm just talking about it's going to be compared to Game of Thrones, no matter what, right? And mm-hmm. so if it was in a vacuum, and this was just some new show that was coming out, then yeah, it could work. But I think that it's always going to be compared to the mother show, the original, whatever you want to call it, and that show stands on the backs of just colossal performances from a cast that, you know, top to bottom is just downright amazing. And so,
all right, can I cut in here for a second?
Go ahead,
Corey. I'm going to tell you right now. I know you're new to this daddy game and all, and so you may be new to be watching animated movies and things like that. But let me tell you, Toy Story, all of them.
Right? I've seen Toy Story.
Hold on, stop! I'm talking. All right. I'm talking about grown ass people crying, sobbing. I'm going to talk about. Let's talk about video games that people play. And that are showing the facial expressions and the body movements of those people that are basically like animated movies, you know. And we're talking about just like these cutscenes for different video games. Oblivion comes to mind, who actually had a bunch of Game of Thrones stars actually in that video game, just to FYI. And I'm not even a gamer, and I know that. You know, all of these different things. Don't tell me that we don't have the technology or the ability to tell a story, an animated story, that can move people to tears or can show those inflections in movies that are or TV shows like Game of Thrones and can't be done in a video game or an animated film or things like that. Don't tell me that your whole premise falls completely flat just on those examples alone.
And may God have mercy on your soul.
I mean, I'm just being honest. I mean, I'm talking about grown people.
I will say, it's funny, you know, my fiance, she doesn't really cry at movies that have real people, but if you make it a panda that knows kung fu connecting with his dad, she will sob like a baby. It doesn't make any sense to me. We went and saw Incredibles 2, cried at the end of that. I was like, damn, girl, you made it 4.5 minutes into this feature before you started to cry. Like, I get what Corey is saying, though, because if it was so easy to make a dramatic show animated, then there would be an example we could pull from. So, and the issue, too, I know Dan has, because we talked about it, but the other issue, too, is you really have two ways to approach it. Do you create your own characters and their own look and then have them be voiced by somebody, or do you try to do like some Polar Express shit and
make
Tom Hanks' face animated
and haunted and, dreams. Like,
go ahead, Dan. Sorry.
Okay, I have 2 points. First, I just want to say how happy I am that we basically started talking about a fantasy world. Like, HBO is not making an anime.
Not at all.
Really good money. So we're just talking fantasy, and that's great. Like, I love that we're completely in imaginary Narnia land. Because why not? It's more fun.
It's better than talking about fucking siege towers.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, my God.
But I agree with Isis and Corey Thone that just it's – I'd just like to add that if you make an animated series about Game of Thrones, one other benefit is it makes it stand out, which is going to be – I guess I already said this – one of the big challenges they have. I mean – yes, Corey Smith, you're right that they've chosen things that are different. You know, Age of Heroes versus Valyria. They have different characters, different geography, different time periods. But they're still going to be these big, sweeping, performance-based, interspersed with, you know, amazing action battles kind of shows like Game of Thrones. You make it an animated show, you have to find a new tone. You have to find a new way to make characters interesting that isn't like the old way. And I think that is something they're going to need. Like, they're going to need incentive to push them into new areas to make a new show actually exciting. It's not going to be enough to lean on the old stuff. So even though it is complete fantasy land, definitely, I would be utterly down for this.
I am so on board with, like, Adam Reed making basically Archer in Westeros. Who gives a shit about a dragon? Like, that kind of...
Lana!
Yeah, exactly. That kind of... And I think I mentioned that, Dan, in your Facebook Live podcast Q&A that, like, if I would be down with, if they're going to do two shows, you know, you have your hour long, you know, drama. Why not make, I mean, I made the joke of making it like The Office, where it's like a bunch of financial people or something, but like
Bravos or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Bravos. But like, I'm really just like making one that's a lot more lighthearted. Like it doesn't have to have any warriors in it. Just like there are people in Westeros that literally just farm and shit. Like there's stories to be told all over the place. That's when you, and that's where, you know, like Star Wars has, I think, drop the ball a little bit with their one-off movies, is we keep focusing on, you know, events that are tied into the original trilogy. Whenever it's like there is a huge universe out there, and I really don't want Westeros to solo themselves, and which, you know, was fine, but it's like, why are you wasting time telling me this when you could have made an original screenplay that was basically Seven Samurai but with Jedi? You know, like there's,
which is exactly what Joss Whedon wanted to do. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so it's the same thing with Westeros. Like, I'm on board. I know it's interesting to talk about, you know, what happened when the dragon people all got burned up by a volcano or whatever, or whenever there were children in the forest everywhere, like they were everybody's neighbor. That's fine, but there's also, like, non-magical stories out there, and, you know, there's a lot of fun stuff in this universe because it's so in-depth that Martin's created, so... You know, I want that. I think that fans are way more on board with that, even casual fans, than studios think. So I would love, now, that being said, of course, everything I just said is stupid because AT&T made it very clear that they don't want that kind of shit. They want content that can be easily absorbed on a Wednesday. So anyway.
Well, I mean, at the same time, like, and I agree with you completely. And I mean, AT&T wants more content. The one that I always went to for like a shorter half hour one, I always pictured it would be a good idea if they had like a half hour sitcom set in the Inn at the Crossroads around Hot Pie.
Yes!
Like Hot Pie is Sam Malone, and it's just a Cheers like thing where it's just every episode, Inn at the Crossroads, travelers come through, travelers leave, maybe Hot Pie romances the Baker girl, like just they have an on again, off again, what do they do thing. I mean, I would actually love it if they made a one-hour epic and then paired it with something shorter and quicker and lighter. It would make me more willing to watch the one-hour epic if I could, like, wash it down with some funny Hot Pie shenanigans at the Inn at the Crossroads. They're lighthearted.
You want to go where everybody knows your house.
Exactly. that was great. Awesome. I think that is the cherry on top. I was trying to think of something and I had nothing. So well done.
Yeah, bravo. No, I think, and it's so funny because like we've just spent, I don't know, like 20 minutes talking or 30. Probably longer, 30 minutes talking about this thing that will never, ever, ever happen. Right. But I hope that maybe the powers that be hear that, you know, we're, you know, the people are looking for something different and it may be super far-fetched and everything, but I think that the way we consume our you know TV shows and things are like that are just not traditional anymore. So why do TV shows need to be so traditional? You know what I mean? And so I guess that was my point going.
Everything's bingy now. Like I sometimes won't even watch a series until the season's over, so I can binge them all in a couple of days.
I mean, yeah, no, I agree.
You know, I will say, HBO has never made any kind of spinoff before. And HBO's made some weird shit. Anybody remember John from Cincinnati, which is like a
karmic
surfer drama?
Yeah.
That was weird as fuck.
Bring back Carnival.
Yes! Carnival! I just rewatched that.
But the point is, like, maybe Disney wouldn't do something risky like this, but you know, maybe HBO has the balls to try something different. It's possible. Less so now that AT&T owns them, but possible.
Yeah.
Well, at least people who are listening to this podcast can tell us what they think of that idea. That's the key. I mean, maybe we're just completely off base.
Tell us what your dream spinoff is. Like I've seen people talking about, if you're going to animate, do you animate Dunkin' Egg? Like that's the thing.
Oh yes.
It would be the best animated, you know, and you could make that pretty lighthearted and stuff. And it's like, but you know, I've seen I've seen people talk about it on social media outlets, be it Twitter and responses or whatever. So let us know on Wick, like what in the comments here, what is your dream? Not just what is your dream story, but how, what's the style? Like, are you hoping for more? I mean, like, cause I really feel like Game of Thrones provides lots of opportunity for different styles. I mean, you could really do a, you could double down on a Fincher style, you know, drama, or you could really open it up and do some, you know, J.J. Abrams action. Like, there's a lot to do. So,
minus the strobing. But, yeah, minus the strobing. But, no, yeah, tell us in the comments or tweet us, you know, and tell us what you think. Because, I mean, you know, I think this is the time to kind of really tell them.
Hey, there's still a year till the show comes back. So,
yeah, exactly. Plenty of time. Plenty of time.
Well, Corey Smith, I know that you just got drummed on, like completely washed out of that conversation. So I, you know.
No, I mean, let's be clear. I'd watch a fucking animated show of Game of Thrones.
Oh, I'm now he will go. Now
he will. It's literally, hold on. I've written an article about this on Wick. It's literally in print like 3 months ago saying that I would watch the show.
I didn't read it.
I will.
I didn't read it.
Hopefully at least Dan read it.
I read it. It's delightful.
Okay.
I read it too, so there you go.
But my, I mean, I don't necessarily see the masses watching it, and that was my point. So I'll watch it. I watch the histories and lore on the DVD extras. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that could be a good
one. Those are lit, though. Like, they're excellent.
Yeah. So, it can be done. It can be done. I just don't know that people are like, yeah, get that guy to do it. I just don't know that it could be done.
Give me Rose Leslie narrating one. Because her section, when she did it for like season one or two, that was amazing. So put her back
in. Oh, the Wildlings. Hell, I would love to know more about the Wildlings. That, yeah, that would be a damn good story. Would be
fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of fun.
Hell yeah.
There's 100 different clans up there and.
That'd be fun. Like, my vote is, like, I know they want the one-hour epic, and I'd watch it. I want it paired with something smaller, like, that would expand, you know, that would, A, more content, which they want, and B, just bring some variety in there. You can do the one traditional and one something new. That's what I'm hoping for. We'll see.
Just like,
I was really shocked they didn't pick Dunkin' Egg. I know that they said from the get-go that it wasn't a possibility, but I just thought, like, it would have been made a great show because it would be a little more episodic, and it would be smaller. You'd only have these big, huge characters dropping in from time to time.
Yeah, everybody in that book is basically a cameo.
Right, exactly. So you would have
to pile on Corey Smith, but I mean, the reason I wasn't surprised they chose it was because they said from the start,
I just said that.
I know, but like,
what's? the way Dan said it made you sound like an idiot. So I'm on board with that.
I'm sorry.
Go
on.
I second that.
I'm sorry.
No, I'm just saying it would have been. It would have fulfilled what you're saying, and just would have been a smaller show, and it would have been cheaper to make for the most part. You'd have some special effects, but for the most part, it would have been them traveling around Westeros. I mean, they go from Dorne to the Reach to eventually they're supposed to get to Winterfell, and you know, and they just meet people and they're on the roads and they have little adventures, and I just thought it would have made a lot better of a, you know, show, and it would have been different but still the same enough that people would have tuned in.
Well, so, I would
self-contained. It's so good.
I would be happy with Jerome Flynn doing like music videos at the end of each episode. I would be happy with, like, just going around to different castles and singing like body tunes. I'd be happy with that. But you know what? We were, like, originally there was a plan to talk about some Sophie Turner comments about her ruining Winterfell in season 8. But I, you know what, man, it's not something that I really want to get into right now, because we could talk about that for another hour. So we're not going to get into that tonight. I think it's where we are. We can cut it and call it good. So make sure that you do leave some comments and let us know either on Twitter, Facebook, or in the comment below of this article when you listen to the podcast, what you would like to see in a prequel series. So for myself, For Dan, thanks for joining us tonight, and I hope you join us more often. For Corey Thumb, for Corey Smith, and for Isis, this has been Take the Black Podcast, Malav Mogulis.